From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When you're talking about education reform, there are always certain subjects that come up, like the quality of teachers or the influence of unions, but you don't always hear about motivation. That is, what is it exactly that makes a young person want to learn in the first place? There are studies that show something like 40% of high school students are disengaged with the experience of learning. And most of the kids who drop out of school, like 70% of them, say it was because they were unmotivated by the experience. We're beginning a series of programs on education reform today, and we're going to start with this question. How do you motivate a kid to learn? Do you promise to give them stuff? Or do you just have to find a way to help them be self-motivated, to do it for the love of learning? Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There are a lot of problems with the country's education system, a lot of stuff that needs to be reformed. You've heard the issues: teacher quality, improperly managed school systems, a lack of funding. But some education experts say there is something even more basic that you've got to deal with before you get to fixing any of that, and that is motivation. Here's the question: how to motivate a kid to want to learn, to engage in the process, to pay attention in class. So today we're talking about that, explaining the nature of motivation, why it matters, and what kind of motivation works. Is it material things like cash or prizes? Or do you have to find a way to make students self-motivated without the promise of any kind of a reward, just for the love of learning? Or do you try both? We invite you to join us today. What have you seen that works to get students motivated? Parents, what have you noticed in your own kids? Or teachers, what have you noticed in your own students? What's working? 801-585-WEST is the number. 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us first on the program is Maria Ferguson. She's the executive director of the Center on Education Policy. It's an education research group at George Washington University. Last year, the group published a six-part report on student motivation. And Maria Ferguson is joining us today from NPR's studios in Washington, D.C. And Maria Ferguson, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to let's identify the problem first. The National Research Council did this analysis a few years ago and found that around 40% of high school students are disengaged from learning. So what does that mean? They're basically bored. They're not really interested in what's going on.
That's exactly what it means. You know, kids have been bored in high school for all time. It's not like this is exactly a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's just the stakes now are much higher because of the changes in the global economy. You know, back in the day, if a kid dropped out of high school, they might could very well find other forms of work that could last them, you know, years until perhaps they went back to school. Or even if they never did go back to school, they could build a career. As we all know, the economy, the world economy has changed.
Yeah.
And those kinds of jobs don't really exist anymore. So having a high school diploma, and there's scads of research that quantifies this both in economic terms and otherwise, is really an absolute necessity for people to get by in this world.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I think people are paying so much attention to it now. High school is a particularly vexing time. We have a saying in education policy that, you know, we sort of love them till sixth grade and then kind of forget about them because
right.
they get difficult. And
right.
anyone who's a parent knows about that. But it's really something that policymakers have not probably paid close enough attention to over the last couple of years.
Is it a natural process, this idea of motivation? Are students just naturally to being, you know, inclined to be less motivated as they go through the process? Is this just sort of the nature of the beast?
Well, we know that motivation declines as students progress from elementary through high school.
Yeah.
And that could be for a couple of reasons. I mean, when you lay it out, when you're talking about motivation in itself, there are two forms of motivation. There's intrinsic motivation, which is just the natural desire to do something. Yeah. So I want to clean up my room because I like an orderly room and it helps me think. Yeah. Or extrinsic motivation, which is I'm going to clean my room because I want to get my allowance. So you're doing something to produce a result. So motivation sort of comes from two places. And the difference between the two is really more of a spectrum than a divide.
Yeah. Is one more desirable than the other? In other words, is intrinsic motivation more intellectually pure? You know, is it the goal to get there to the point where they want to do it? Or do we just have to acknowledge that there are extrinsic forces? You know, we want things. We want our allowance. We want gifts or rewards. Do we just have to put them all together? Or is one more desirable than the other?
That's a great question, and it really is at the heart of it, because it is very tempting to apply a value judgment to this kind of thing.
Yeah.
That you want your student or you want your child to finish their 5 books by the end of term for the sheer fact that they should love reading, because
yeah.
you know you love reading.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't always work that way. Everyone is different. Every child, every human being is constructed in a different way and is motivated by different things. So sometimes you just got to make the best of what you got.
Yeah.
And you know, there's going to be the kid who's going to read 100 books even when you only assign 20. And then there's the kid that's just going to need a little extra motivation.
Yeah.
And there are a range of ways you can go about doing that.
All right, so be careful, because I'm going to probably impose a little value judgment here. But I have to say, there's this question that comes up as to whether or not it's a generation thing. You know, is this generation, you know, you hear about the me generation and the millennials who tend to be maybe, again, value judgment, a little bit more sort of self-involved. Would the generation of another era, you know, not this particular generation, be more intrinsically motivated? Or is this a fairly static thing in human nature, that we are motivated by the intrinsic things and the outside things too?
You know, I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
This generation is facing a whole bunch of challenges that previous generations did not face. They may be more comfortable economically. They may have more stuff, more gadgets, more this, more that. They may not be toiling out in the fields under the hot sun. But yeah. it doesn't mean that they're not facing their own set of challenges.
Right.
So, you know, motivation issues, as I said, have existed for all time. They just show up in different forms with every, you know, passing year and as life and world, the world changes.
In your report, you say that motivation doesn't receive really much attention in the discussion about educational reform. You've got accountability and school standards, and I went through this in the introduction. Why is that, do you think, that motivation and these elements of motivation isn't one of the things that we're talking about all that much in reform?
Well, it has been a hot topic of conversation over these last 2 years. That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
But before that, you're right. And I think it comes from a couple of places. I mean, I think one, the what we call sort of the No Child Left Behind era, which was this era of, you know, very focused on tests, high stakes testing, really expecting all kids to meet the grade. No Child Left Behind was federal, you know, education law that didn't set out to do that per se, but the ramifications of it were that there was an increased focus on testing. So that really kind of sucked all the air out of the room. So thinking about how students move through the system really wasn't on people's minds all that much, because they were so focused on getting kids up to speed and getting them to meet those scores.
Yeah.
I think that the backlash of that has been more of a focus on, you know, how students really tick, what really gets them going, and increased attention on the dropout rate has really probably been the single biggest factor. You know, when you see those graduation rates and those dropout rate numbers, it's quite shocking.
Mm.
And you can't help but immediately turn to, why are these kids dropping out? What is motivating them to drop out? What is motivating some of them to stay in school? So it's sort of a natural conversation that came from that.
One of the things the report points out is that a student's belief about, you know, about learning in general and about themselves has an effect on this. I mean, the report says that if a student, for example, thinks that they can't do it or has self-doubt, that affects motivation. But it also, it's interesting, the report says that if a student thinks intelligence is this kind of fixed, you know, quantity, something that you have or you don't have, that also tends to be something that can be less motivating for them. So it's the way they think about intelligence, about education in general, is important.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff really is counterintuitive, which makes it really hard for both teachers and parents to sort of get it right, if there is a right. You know, there's no perfect way of doing this. And even though you can break student motivation, or at least researchers break student motivation down into four major dimensions, those dimensions are not static. They sort of move and interplay with one another all the time. And then you have external factors such as home environment, school climate, all that kind of stuff that factor into it as well. So it's not always easy for people to know the right way to motivate someone. And oftentimes it's a bit of trial and error.
Yeah. Let's talk about those dimensions. Competence is one. Control is another. Well, let's start with competence. Talk about that as an element here.
So basically, competence refers to students believing that they can actually complete the task.
Yeah.
And it's much easier when you're talking about a discrete task, something that they understand that they could do. You're going to need, if you read this book, you will get, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, you need to get an A.
Yeah.
Which is not a discrete task. There's a lot of factors that go into getting an A, and so students can start to doubt themselves. So if competence comes from a student belief that they can complete the task, you want that task to be as discrete and as clear as possible.
Right. So so the idea isn't just saying, break it down. That's the point, right? Saying it can't be abstract. It has to be very, very clear to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, control is another factor. This is really an important dimension here. A student has to feel like they're in control of all of this.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And this is, to me, this is the most interesting dimension, because so much of what happens in most classrooms is about command control.
Yeah.
Teachers have to keep the classroom in order. That's a good thing. You know, they're rewarded for doing that. But students need to have some control over their destiny. This is part of growing. This is part of developing their own sense of determination and confidence in their decision making. So they have to feel that they have some choice about how to undertake the task, and then see a link between their actions and the outcome. So it's this sense of there is some sort of autonomy involved in what they're doing to complete this task. And that, it's important, but it's also a little hard to sort of get your hands around sometimes, because most parents and teachers really do not want to relinquish control to students or kids. It's not something that comes naturally to most of us.
Yeah. Interest or value is another dimension. The student has to be invested in this. They have to basically see that there's some value to it for them.
Yeah, I mean, and the perfect example of this is the difference between, you know, it's really hard for students to see the value in how important it is for all the test scores in a school to be high.
Yeah.
You know, so when a teacher talks about, okay, guys, come on, we're going to take this test and we're going to get the highest test scores in the county. Our school's going to be number one. You know, to your average student, that doesn't really mean much to them. They don't understand the value in their school being number one in the county. You know, it's really not almost not personal enough in terms of what their interest in the task is. And this can be a difficult thing to do. This is really important, especially as kids get older and you're talking about incentivizing them to do things that will get them into college, you know, because you really want them to understand why getting into college is important to them.
Yeah.
What value it is going to have for them over their lifetime.
And then finally, in these dimensions, there's relatedness. Explain what that is. This is the idea of they want to get some kind of, not a pat on the back. They want some recognition for all of this.
Yeah, it's really the social element.
Yeah.
So, you know, that completing the task would bring a social reward, such as a sense of belonging, being part of a team, or even just winning approval from someone who they admire or someone who's important to them or an institution that is important to them. This is the kind of thing that children, all of us in some ways, find very motivating. We want to be part of a winning team. We want to be accepted by our peers. We want it to be acknowledged for our work by someone who is important to us. So that sort of relationship piece of it is what this dimension is about.
Yeah. Let me take some calls. 801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Kyle is with us in Orem, Utah. Kyle, welcome.
Thank you. Hey, I'm just calling to let you know that I was in high school, and I felt very disinterested in learning at school, though I really loved learning because of all the attention that was given to the people who didn't care to learn, but they were, you know, mandatory to make a certain minimum level. And so I had no interest in performing. But then once I got to college and I'm working on my master's program, now that I'm there with people who pay to be there and want to be there, my performance is, you know, dramatically improved.
So they wanted to be there. That was one of the, well, I guess this is the problem, isn't it, Maria Ferguson? In your, in, you know, at college, they're paying for it. So there's another kind of element of motivation that's going on there. But we're talking about high school where kids, they sort of have to be there. We're hoping they'll translate it. But I guess this is the difficult thing.
Yeah, I mean, what the caller brings up a great point. You know, it's the whole notion of skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
when you're in college, at least, you know, some kids are paying their own way. They're surrounded by people who are equally motivated, because that's very important. I mean, it's hard to be motivated yourself when you're surrounded by people who have no motivation whatsoever. So they're surrounded by people who are motivated, and that feeds on one another. The challenge in high school, too, is, you know, most American high schools really have not changed that much in the last 50 years. Mm. So, and if you think about how dramatically the world has changed in the last 20 years alone with the advent of technology, if you walk through an average high school, you know, you'll probably hearken back to the day when you were in high school,
right,
or me, which,
yeah,
was, you know, a long time ago.
Yeah, me too.
And that's part of the problem, too, is that the places where you see kids really staying in school and staying engaged are places that have really acknowledged the fact that the world has changed and tried to give students more opportunities to engage in project-based work and hands-on work that is embedded with valuable and useful technologies. So the work they're doing in high school is really very reflective of the world in which they're living.
Yeah. I guess this is the point Bobby is making in Salt Lake City. Bobby, welcome to the program. Technology is your point, right?
Yeah, technology. Our teenagers nowadays they can go into a game and they can move really fast from one level to another level to another level, and they learn really fast. And my son was in a regular high school, and he got called into the advisor's office, and I met him there, and he told the advisor, "You don't give me a chance to move forward. You know, I'm not a sheep. I can't just come and do what everybody else is doing." And we moved him to an alternative high school that was for the quote-unquote bad kids. And the principal sat everyone down and said, "Look, you're here. This is your life. What are you going to do with it?" And they let the students create their own plan. And he graduated with honors and joined the Army, and now he's in college himself, and he's completely motivated in his life. Mm.
I guess that's instructive, right, Maria Ferguson? This is the point, letting them acknowledge the new world, or the world where things are intuitive for them, and having them construct their own sense of it.
The caller brings up such an important point, and I'm so thankful for that phone call, because it really touches on something very important. The caller mentioned the boredom and video games, and, you know, we all sort of have this negative reaction about kids video gaming, but the video gaming industry has done more research on human motivation and what makes people want to do things than any other industry on Earth.
Wow.
And there's a lot to be learned from that. And this idea that you progress through steps,
yeah,
you make your way moving forward, much like the caller said, if I get to this, then I rise up to the next level. And then I accomplish this and I rise up to the next level. This is very motivating for young people. Otherwise, there wouldn't be millions of people playing video games, both young and old.
Yeah.
So there is something to be learned about that. And I'm delighted that she was able to find an alternative high school for her son, because the idea that kids who are unmotivated are labeled as bad or that they don't have anything to offer is heartbreaking. And it's also just an incredible waste of talent. There is many students out there who have enormous talent, but who drop out because they just never really were directed in the right way.
Back to the phones. Justin with us in Payson, Utah. Justin, hi.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, thanks. I just wanted to kind of get your guest's remarks on a comment that you made earlier about fear playing a factor in some of the problems with education. One of the things that I've noticed as an educator for some time is that this particular generation seems to be afraid to even try things, because they will say, "I don't want to do that because I'm not good at it." I think that's this culture of being afraid to fail derives from many different things, but I was wondering if you could comment on ways that perhaps we can get rid of that culture of failure and encourage this idea of I'm going to try it, and who knows, maybe I will become good at it, because that's really what education is fundamentally about.
Yeah. Maria Ferguson, what do you think?
Yeah, another great point. In education, there's a very popular expression, and I'm not sure if it got started with a book or a movie, where people like to say failure is not an option. And I have to admit, I always cringe a little bit when people say that, because if you think about the most successful companies in the world, high-tech companies, all the leaders of these companies talk about how important failure was to them in the development of their product. You know, you experiment, you fail, you pick up, you try again. And I think that that message has been somewhat lost on this generation, as if the stakes are so high that failure is not an option. And if you don't do it perfectly, you know, then goodness knows what's going to happen. And I do think we want to give our students a little bit of latitude. And that goes to this idea of rewarding the task and the effort more than the overall long-term goal. Because then you allow the student a little bit of flexibility and wiggle room. So if things don't go right, you know, you can jump in there maybe with a mid-course correction, praise the positive aspect of trying, and then move them down the line so hopefully they'll be able to achieve what they want to achieve. But if they feel like there's no latitude for failure, you know, I don't think anything good really comes of that, because it just really stresses them out enormously.
Justin, thanks very much for the call. Bobby, thanks to you as well. And Kyle, also 801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. So Maria Ferguson, stay with us. We should mention she's the executive director of the Center on Education Policy at George Washington University, joining us from NPR in Washington. Stay with us. We're going to have you back in a moment. We're going to get to a particular program that uses reward as a part of their motivation process. We're going to talk a little bit about that and then come back to you and talk about how these kinds of things work in the scheme of things. Again, join us, 801-585-WEST, email address radiowest@kuer.org. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, it's the first in a couple of programs on reforming the education system. But when you're talking about reform, most of the focus gets to be on teacher quality or tests or school management. But some experts say really the focus needs to turn to motivation, how you motivate young people to want to learn, to engage in the experience of learning. Joining us now on the program is Rick Fulkerson. He is Vice President of Marketing and the Executive Director of Community Relations for Ken Garf Automotive Group. He's also president of the foundation called Success in Education, which oversees two Utah education incentive programs. We're going to be talking about the particulars of those programs as we go along. But Rick Fulkerson, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Doug, nice to be here. Thank you so very much.
Well, let me start with, when did it occur to you And the people in your organization that motivation was one of those components that you wanted to focus on? Was there a kind of epiphany that you had about all of that?
Well, the programs are really developed around the Garf family, and automotive incentives go hand in hand. I mean, when you buy cars, you're incentivized to buy them. And I think we've always incentivized our children to work hard. And I think they just align really well. Not to mention high school kids and cars really align.
Yeah. So this was just something that it wasn't really a study that you had done. It was just kind of a common sense hunch in some way. Let's give them incentives.
Yeah, I think that's where it started. And then we actually went out to administrators as the idea kind of germinated that, hey, high school kids and cars, if we give cars away, can we motivate kids to do things for the right reasons? And the Garf family's always been committed to academics. And it was founded by the Garf family. We are in a public charity now, being managed by public and board oversight. But it really is about incentivizing kids to do the right things. And I heard some of those points being made earlier in your show.
When you look at the statistics that show declining scores and dropout rates and stuff like that, was there one that stood out for you in particular that was kind of alarming that you wanted to get at?
Well, dropout rates really is a big issue.
Yeah.
And the issue of boredom, the issue of unengaged students in high school is a big issue. And again, if we can provide incentives and rewards to keep kids engaged, keep them focused, keep them committed to school, then it also gives teachers more tools and resources to help them within the classrooms.
We were talking earlier about the types of motivation with Maria Ferguson. There's the intrinsic stuff, the kind that comes from inside a kid, and those who are self-motivated, and then the extrinsic stuff, as she put it, something that requires, a carrot or a stick. How are you thinking about this in that way, that you've got the intrinsic stuff, the kids are kind of self-motivated, but the extrinsic stuff, the car, the prizes and stuff. Is it a mixture of these kinds of things? Or are you just being realistic and saying, let's give them incentive for something that they want first? Let's start with that.
Sure. I think we can't be all things to all parties.
Yeah.
And I think what we find is that when we put tools in the hands of teachers, when you find budget cuts constantly, and we give key cards that allow kids to earn them that are prize-based through academic performance, teachers can utilize those tools and resources to sit down, set goals, and then ultimately reward them in front of their peers for doing good things.
Yeah. So let the teacher figure it out.
Yeah. We've given autonomy to the schools to take the program. Here's the basic structure. Now, get to the one-on-one. Find those kids that are struggling. And what we found is that we're motivating the 80% of the student body that's there. We recognize that the top 10 or top 20, they're going to get there regardless. The bottom 10% are really struggling. The administration's struggling with them. But there's this big mass of student body that really doesn't ever get recognized or rewarded for what? For staying in school, for working hard. And that's a real strong fit for our program.
The big group in the middle.
Yeah.
Do you think that, explain how the program works, the kind of the principles that sort of shape it.
So really easy and quickly, each school gets 500 to 600 key cards. Key cards are earned all academic-based, grade point improvement, test score, assignments, peer tutoring. It's not about throwing in an extra touchdown pass or doing a cheerleader back handspring. It's really academic-focused, and those things are important. I don't want to minimize. When they earn a key card, by goal setting with their teacher, they're then entered into an end-of-year assembly. They have to qualify that end-of-year assembly by hitting 3 of 6 criteria, where really grade point, it's 2.5 GPA, attendance, taking the ACT test, apply for post-secondary education, enrolled in a math class. And so those 500 to 600 key cards are narrowed down to 50 finalists. One of those 50 finalists in an end-of-year assembly wins a brand new iPad and then goes on to win one of 5 brand new cards that are given away at 12 schools at a time. That's the program.
Yeah. So it seems like you're saying it's not just about giving people stuff. The idea is it's not just, the incentive isn't just, oh, there's a car at the end of the road here, but there are goals along the way. This is not goals versus incentive. It's both. Is that?
Yeah. And what we found is that the key cards, the car is really cool, but it's so far in the distance. But what we found is the key cards there's 40,000 prizes on our website. And what we found is that instant gratification of getting kids engaged with teachers and by doing things academically, that they're far more aligned with the key cards. And probably most importantly is we have a lot of kids that earn key cards and never claim their prize. What they're most grateful for is that the teacher recognized them, knew their name, and identified them for doing something great academically.
Reading is big for you. That's a big part of the, to talk a little bit about that.
So the Road to Success program is really about daily reading habits. It's interesting. We just started a tracking process that's web-based, and we have 165,000 elementary school-aged children that are aligned with this program. We have over 40,000 students now that are that started in a 2-week period tracking, web-based tracking, the books that they're reading, their daily reading habits. We're really excited about this new program. And when students read 5 days a week, they get to put their name into a drawing for one of 4 big grand prizes, which are bicycles, scooters, or iPod shuffles. If they read all 7 days, they get to put their name in twice, and then there's a drawing every 8 weeks. So it's really, again, incentives, rewards, and good, just good habits that we're trying to elicit from the kids.
I want to get you to respond to a couple of there are concerns to these types of programs that are you know reward based. One is that it's not lasting, that it's not intrinsic, that once you pull the reward out, it collapses. How do you respond to that?
You know, I think that there's definite validity to that, and no program's perfect. But what we found is that sometimes we get a kid moving away from school that all of a sudden we can catch them, turn them, and reward them and get them back. And we have thousands of letters over a 10-year period of kids that said, hey, I was going in a wrong direction. A key card helped me realign. A teacher noticed me, recognized me, and now I'm back at it. Again, it's not a perfect program, but what it is doing is it's rectifying some issues and giving tools and resources to teachers really at the boots on the streets kind of approach to getting these kids to do the right things extrinsically by rewarding them.
Yeah. How do you define success? What's success for this program?
Interesting. So what we found is over the past 2 years, we've been measuring key card or students that earn key cards versus students that don't. And so what we found is that kids that earn key cards are raising their grade point, a grade step, versus those that aren't participating. And so what we're seeing is that through the grade step that there's grade point improvement, and we're seeing them that move towards better graduation rates and focusing on post-secondary education. This year, we'll give almost 400 scholarships away to deserving high school kids. That's also a big part of the Keys to Success program. And we need them getting into post-secondary education. I know we're talking about incentives, but ultimately, high school's never enough if we want them to excel and succeed in society.
Hard to measure, right?
It is hard. It there's no doubt. Lots of variables of how key cards are distributed and utilized at the teacher level, academic-based, but that's a broad statement. Lots of variables, and so what you find is you find it very difficult to measure. But what we're seeing is
And some teachers aren't going to do it right.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have 100% participation. But again, you'll find that in many programs.
Yeah. So let me ask you about the dynamic here that I think is important, which is that this is a partnership, or you want it to be a partnership between this kind of private entity and a public institution like the school. I mean, and we'll talk a little bit about this as we go a little along in the program, but these ideas of partnerships, is this appealing to you, this idea of making these kinds of partnerships with a public institution and this private entity?
Well, we think so. We think that... a partnership means that we partner with the schools. We don't tell them what to do. We try to align their goals and our goals and work in unison. And when you're unified and united in a cause, I think you can get greater results. We see reading scores moving. We see student scores going up that participate in our program. And you know what? No program's perfect, but this is where we want to put our energy and our efforts. And these programs are $1.2 million a year in investment. And it's just our way of saying, you know what, we care about education, we care about making a difference, and lots of great causes, but if we can make a difference now in test score reading, getting kids reading at or above grade level, and then if we can help high school kids graduate from high school and post-secondary, we can make a huge difference.
You're trying to get other people involved?
Absolutely. We have lots of business partnerships. You know, Ken Garf is one of the title sponsors of Keys to Success, so is Mountain America.
But you don't want it just to be a Ken Garf thing.
It is not a Ken Garf thing. Ken Garf is a sponsor of success in education. So is Mountain America. So is Zions Bank, Academy Mortgage, UESP. We have great sponsors that really support this program. And if you want to get involved, you can call, get on our website. You know, we invite you to come support us because we can't do it alone. There's so many ways that we can help children, and we want to make a difference.
Rick Fulkerson, Executive Director of Community Relations for Ken Garf Automotive Group, which spearheads and sponsors the Keys to Success and Road to Success programs. We'll put a link, by the way, that you mentioned on our website. Rick, thanks.
Thank you so very much, Doug. You have such a great program. Thank you.
Thanks. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about motivation as an element of school reform, how you motivate young people to want to learn and to engage in the experience of learning. You can join us 801-585-WEST, our email address radiowest@kuer.org. Here is an email from Scott who writes, I had a real hard time in high school, no idea at the time, but it turns out I really don't like authority figures. In high school, I didn't do well, blew off a lot of things just because I was told to do them. I think it could have saved a lot of time and money in college if I would have been free to do the things more independently in high school. Now, he writes, I work at the university doing research. Turned out reasonably well for you, Scott. Thanks very much. Christopher sends this. I'm an instructor at Utah Valley University, and partly due to UVU's open enrollment admissions policy, I frequently encounter timid, submissive, fearful students who are incredibly unmotivated. Extrinsic motivation, he writes, is short-lived. Two things have really helped my students, and I think it's increased their intrinsic motivation. One, he says, I stopped lecturing and started teaching in a more engaged manner. And two, I started sharing power with students, letting them amend or generate class policies, allowing them to bring content from their lives into courses instead of imposing my own agenda. Christopher, thanks very much for that. We're going to get to that point, I think, a little bit later in the program as well. Maria Ferguson is back with us, the executive director of the Center on Education Policy at George Washington University. And last year, they published the report we've been referring to called Student Motivation, an Overlooked Piece of School Reform. And Maria Ferguson, welcome back. I want to talk about this program that we're talking with Rick Fulkerson about, this idea of having these key cards. And in the end, there's the potential you could get an iPad and you could get a car. In the report, you deal with this idea of money and rewards. You talk about, first of all, they can be controversial, but what do you make of them in general?
Well, it's hard to generalize. Rick did a great job of telling us about his program. Key cards and iPods and cars aside, Rick's program has some pretty important factors associated with it that really undergird great results in this area. One, they're clearly focused on continually assessing and evaluating their program, which is a great thing to do because you want to make mid-course corrections every step of the way. You want to actually see the results of your program and then be able to make tweaks and changes based on those results. Their program is completely not only aligned with the school's academic efforts and goals, but really the community's. It's a community-based program. They seem to have entities from outside the school involved within the school, and that's a very important thing. A lot of these rewards programs are often just add-ons. They're not really core to the school's overall academic goals. So it seems like that they have that piece very well in place. That's also a targeted intervention. Their focus is focusing specifically on that middle group, and that's a really important part of it because those are the kids that are always the ones that are at risk for low motivation and dropping out. And perhaps most importantly is the focus and the power given to the teachers. Their reward program is a tool that can be used by teachers to achieve their goals over time.
Yeah.
These are really important elements to me. It's almost the key cards, the car, and the iPod in some ways don't even really matter because they really have these very core, very important pieces in place in their program, and that bodes very well for it for over time.
Well, let's put that particular program aside because you talk about how some of these things are working, but generally to more extrinsic kinds of programs in schools. There's that argument against the fact that they're not, as I mentioned, durable or lasting, that if students have to keep being motivated by some material reward, that it's not really sustainable. And you're also mentioned in the report, there's this idea of there being this compliance mentality, this argument that they encourage this kind of mentality. Talk a little bit about those, because there are these downsides to some of these programs.
Yeah, there definitely are. I mean, the compliance mentality piece is really interesting. And, you know, Roland Fryer from Harvard really probably did the most cited study on this where they focused on reward efforts in four major cities. And, you know, the range of results stemmed from, you know, not just no increase in academic achievement, but also like bad side effects to marginal gains for certain programs put into place. And, you know, this compliance idea that you sort of pay someone to do something that they're not really engaged in and they don't really have an inner sense of why they're doing it, and it doesn't sort of do anything for them other than to achieve this incremental goal, which is, you know, perhaps a raised test score or something yeah. like that, can really have a negative effect on a student's sense of motivation. It can sort of, you know, kill it inside for them. You know, you the tasks that sort of build them personally, and that building sort of runs parallel to the larger academic goals of the school, are probably the ones that are really going to accomplish more in the long run. I mean, you want these rewards and goals to build a student's confidence, to build a student's sense of self, not to knock it down, but the alchemy between all of it is pretty tricky.
Yeah.
That's why the continuous assessment and evaluation piece is really important. So if you've done something that is having, you know, negative consequences, you want to get in there and you want to fix it.
And we have to keep going back to those four dimensions that you were talking about, because some studies have found that if you pay students to increase their test scores, this is something you referred to earlier, nothing really changes. But if you pay students to read books, that gets a better result. It has to be, again, something in their control.
Yes, especially when the students are young.
Yeah. 801-585-WEST, the number two, join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Laurie is with us in Henryville, Utah. Laurie, welcome.
Hi. My comment was, and I have seen, my kids have had friends whose parents will pay them for good grades.
Yeah.
And my kids have asked me, they said, how come we can't do that? And I said, because we can't afford to do that. And so I've seen kids, and they grow up, they go to college, and the motivation's not there. So they haven't learned the motivation, because I think that some motivation has to be learned. You have to learn that you get satisfaction from doing certain things. And when you're given the reward of money, you kind of don't have as much of the satisfaction of doing it just to do it. And so the motivation to keep going, to keep getting it, is gone.
Yeah.
And unless you've learned that skill to keep going when the immediate reward's not there, then you have trouble in the future.
Yeah. Maria, what do you think? I mean, this is why it's controversial, this particular idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. You know, one of the biggest challenges about schooling is it's really constructed on a model based on delayed gratification, because you go through it for many years and the reward is apparently out there at the end, but you're never really quite sure. And I think the caller is exactly right, is sometimes just the experience of putting yourself through that process, knowing that, you know, it's not going to be terribly gratifying right at this moment, it does change your mindset about intrinsic motivation. I mean, you sort of develop that sense of, oh, well, I did this and I worked over time and I saw that this resulted in a good thing over time. So, you know, you've sort of learned that lesson. Well, if you never have the opportunity to learn that lesson, be it academically or even learning how to play a complicated instrument or a hard sport, you never really learn the lesson that, you know, sometimes you just need to carry yourself through something to get something that's a little bit further down the line. If you know, it's like the idea, if you've never tasted it, you don't know what it tastes like. And if we never give kids a chance to develop that because we're always paying them to do this or, you know, figuring out some other way to get them through it, sometimes it is just grit. And grit is developed over time.
One of the things you've written about is beyond just, you know, money and rewards or goals, these non-traditional approaches. Inquiry-based learning, service learning, extracurricular kinds of programs. This seems to get to the idea of we really need to use our imagination. We need to be creative, I think, as policymakers and as educators to sort of figure this stuff out. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. And again, it gets to the issue we talked about earlier and what several of your callers have mentioned is, you know, schools have a tendency to be a command control entity.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about creativity and you're talking about inquiry and you're talking about project-based learning, these are the kinds of environments that give students power. Students take more responsibility. They oftentimes in project-based learning, the students are given a very simple set of instructions, and then they're charged with figuring out the process by which they're going to go about doing things. Oftentimes nowadays, they're allowed to use their technologies. They're allowed to bring their laptops or their phones to complete their work. So it gives them a sense of power that in a traditional classroom they may not have. And that fosters creativity, it fosters collaboration, it fosters the kind of skills that businesses report as, you know, the most important qualities they want in employees. It's not so much, you know, oh, well, I want them to be able to, you know, do certain algebraic formulations. They want them to be able to be creative and to work with other people in an environment and be able to function that way, because that's the way the modern world is.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about these alternative or non-traditional approaches, we got an email this morning that sort of led us to one particular program. It's not exactly in the public school system, but I thought it was interesting. There's the education technology company called Instructure in Salt Lake City is part of this team that's developed an online class that uses popular culture to engage students. There's a partnership between the University of California, Irvine, and that and the cable TV show The Walking Dead. And the class, it's only open to people 18 years and older, so it doesn't directly apply here, but it's this experiment that could develop into classes for this pre-college level. And I wanted to get the CEO of this organization on the program to sort of say something about it. Josh Coates is joining us. He's the CEO of Instructure. He's in Las Vegas on business, but he's joining us by phone. And Josh, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Doug. Thanks.
Well, give us a sense. So what you're thinking about is the idea to motivate students is to appeal to something popular in popular culture, like The Walking Dead.
Well, it's an interesting experiment, and I think that public education today can use more experimentation. And the world is changing rapidly, and so how you get ahead is by trying things out. And so the University of California at Irvine and AMC and Instructure got together and said, hey, you know what is really interesting is this television show that 12 million people watch.
Yeah.
There's a lot of rich content and topics within that, public health, social science. There's actually physics and even mathematics in it as well. Wouldn't it be interesting if we use that as a context to engage people in learning? And so that's the experiment, and especially for millennials who yeah. are always accused of having very short attention spans.
Right.
We're excited about this. We think something will come out of it.
But you're in early days, right?
Yes. Well, right now we're open for registration, and we've had tens of thousands of people register for the course. It's a free course. It's open. The reason we have a restriction, age restriction of 18, is because, I don't know if you've watched the show,
yeah.
it's sort of for mature audiences only. There's, well, dead people, that,
right.
and there's blood, and it's kind of a mess. But, you know, it's something that will be open for registration until the season opener, which is October 13th,
yeah.
And then it's an 8-week course will be. It's actually global. It's not just U.S. It's a open to global registration.
Maria Ferguson, what do you think? Zombies as a motivator. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I love the esprit de corps of experimentation, and I think at the college level, you know, you're certainly going to see more of that probably than you will at K-12. But, you know, I understand the thinking behind it. I know I've done some work with UC Irvine, and I know how talented the people there are. You know, I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with sort of testing the bounds of these things to see what you can motivate how you can motivate students, what works and what doesn't work. I mean, the system really has been in place for a long time, and the world has changed dramatically. So it doesn't not make sense to me to sort of push things a little bit, especially since popular culture is such a big part of students' lives in high school and in college. It seems silly to ignore it. So, you know, I'd be interested to see how it all works out.
Yeah. Josh, good luck. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Doug. Bye-bye.
801-585-WEST, again, the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call from Miguel, who's with us in Salt Lake City. Miguel, welcome.
Hi, Doug.
Hi.
I was listening to a show, and I heard the lady was explaining how she was trying to incentivize their children to get better grades by paying them, and that's something I absolutely plan to do with my children when I have them. But it got me thinking about when I tried, as I'm teaching my goddaughter to play chess, it started with checkers, and I'd bribe her with chocolate. This was to keep her attention span and knowing her strengths and weaknesses, her likes, her personality. But as she got older, I started paying her money as she learned chess to. And now she's learned to appreciate chess for a complicated and fun game with her uncle, her godfather. I think as they get older, you have to adjust your incentives, but initially, yeah, it's about bribing them.
Yeah, it's a kind of a crass word, but probably may apply. But I guess, Maria Ferguson, that goes into what you were thinking or talking about a little bit before, you know, moving them toward intrinsic, I guess. But, you know, you've got some extrinsic stuff you've got to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we sometimes call it incentivization as opposed to bribery.
Right, right.
That sounds a little less terrible, I guess. But, you know, it's also, I suspect with your daughter is, I'm sure she's in it for the chocolate and the money, but also spending a little quality time with her dad and her uncle is probably one of the things that's motivating her as well. So even though you are monetarily compensating her, you're also there with her. You are engaging with her. And that's something that I would not be surprised if she values almost as much as the chocolate.
Well, and it's a perfect segue into an important part of the report, which is, you know, put aside the elements of reward and all of that, and let's just talk about the, you know, family backgrounds, parental involvement, this idea of family and culture. This is an important part you've got to throw into the equation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is part of what Richard's program is a little bit about. In a lot of communities, the things that we know help develop intrinsic motivation, they're not the sole factors in developing intrinsic motivation, but we do know through research that influence intrinsic motivation, and that's caring and present parents or adult figures, attention, engagement around reading especially, which we know is one of the most formative building blocks of lifelong learning, around chess, around music, around football, whatever it may be. There are some students that are just don't have that in their life for whatever reason, and they are surrounded by individuals that are not motivated and don't have intrinsic motivation. So they have no examples of this in their life anywhere. So community programs that really focus on developing this or filling those gaps, if you will, school programs and community programs can be very important because not all students are that lucky. They're not surrounded by it all the time.
Maria Ferguson, she's Executive Director of the Center on Education Policy at George Washington University, published a report last year called Student Motivation, an Overlooked Piece of School Reform. She joined us from NPR in Washington. Maria Ferguson, thanks.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. We invite you to go to our website and continue the conversation. I also wanted to mention that there were comments for and against the Keys to Success program. Some liked it, some didn't, but I wanted to just disclose that, and we hope you will join us. I'm Doug Fabrizio.